Obadiah's brief prophecy is a tale of two cities, the origins of which are in a distant past that we'll explore together. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. The story of Obadiah begins many years before with the story of a familiar family. I'm going to tell the story from the words of Bible scholar John Phillips. A certain man had two sons. They were twins, born the same day, within the same hour. Unlike many twins, these boys were as different as night is from day. Their differences were so obvious, it was remarked from the moment of their birth. They were different in appearance, different in their appetites, different in their appeal. The one was hairy, the other was smooth. The one craved sensual things, the other was hungry for spiritual things. The one appealed to the father, the other to the mother. The one boy, by instinct, was a killer. He liked to tramp the wild woods in search of prey. Nothing pleased him more than to bring down a deer with a well-aimed arrow, to skin it and to bring back the red meat to camp. The other boy was by instinct a keeper. He liked to roam the green pastures and gather the flock around him. Nothing pleased him more than to mind and multiply sheep, to care for the lambs, and to bring back the strays to the field. There was something about the older boy that fascinated the father. The father was a mild man, easily ruled, but given to appetite. He always felt drawn toward the wilder of the two boys. There was something about the younger boy that fascinated the mother. She was a somewhat willful woman herself, not easily ruled, a woman given to precipitous action. She always felt drawn to the younger, the wiser of the two boys. The one boy grew up to be a lover of this world. He cared nothing for the world to come, nothing for God, nothing for the verbal traditions of truth that were the great heritage of the family into which he was born. The other boy grew up to be a lover of the world to come. He cared a great deal about God, about the family faith, about the covenant, about the things that spoke of Christ. Thus, one boy grew up wild, a killer, a despiser of spiritual things. The other boy grew up wise, a keeper, a desirer of spiritual things. The boys quarreled to the extent that they had had bad blood between them. The younger boy was sent away from home and only came back many years later, a sadder but wiser man, a man broken by God. The older boy strayed and stayed away, growing wilder and bolder and more a partaker of the spirit of the age. Both boys married. The younger boy chose his bride from among those who had some knowledge of the truth, a knowledge derived from the godly testimony of his grandfather in days gone by. The older boy had a taste for the carnal, the exotic, the sensual. He chose for himself a daughter of a local pagan Canaanite and also a daughter of banished Ishmael. From the families of these two boys, related by blood but riven apart by all else, there developed in the process of time two nations. The one nation was wild, godless, secure in its inaccessible hills and in the power of its might. The other nation was chosen of God, secure in his love, shepherded by the Most High, despite its self-will and sin. And as we might expect, there was little love lost between the two peoples, as there had been little love lost between the two persons from whom they sprang. The name of the older son, as you could guess, was Esau. The name of the younger was Jacob. The nation that sprang from Esau was Edom. The nation that sprang from Jacob was Israel. In Malachi chapter 1, God sums up the ebb and flow of their national characters when he declared that he loved Jacob and hated Esau. Esau and Jacob, Edom and Israel, locked together in history and in prophecy. Obadiah's prophecy is the tale of Pera, the famous capital of Edom, and of Jerusalem, the famous capital of Judah. Nobody knows for sure when Obadiah preached. There is no mention of the Assyrians or the Babylonians. The book raises no doctrinal issues. We know nothing about the prophet except his name, which was a fairly common name in Israel. His name means servant of Yahweh. And we know that he prophesied to the southern kingdom of Judah. He could have prophesied before the Babylonian invasion, during it, or after it was over. We also know that he was rightfully filled with indignation against Edom. When the children of Israel were on their way to Canaan after their exodus from Egypt, the Edomites refused them passage through their territory. In later years, the Edomites were often at war with the Hebrew people and were thrashed again and again by the kings of Judah, but they were never completely subdued. In the early 6th century BC, the southern kingdom of Judah experienced almost unimaginable, painful experiences. Over an 11-year period, survivors witnessed successively the Babylonian invasion, the deportation of the upper classes, the razing of Jerusalem and the temple, the slaughter of the population, and the scattering of the survivors. When Nebuchadnezzar sacked Jerusalem, the joy of the Edomites knew no bounds, and they did all they could to befriend and assist the Babylonians. As the wall of Jerusalem was assaulted, the Edomites screamed with delight. Psalm 137:7 documents the Edomites saying, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. Although they were distant cousins of the Israelites, the Edomites abandoned them. Rather than standing up to protect their brother, they rejoiced as Jerusalem was destroyed. However, their exultation was brief, for within 4 years, Edom itself was invaded by Nebuchadnezzar and completely overthrown. This was clearly foreseen by Obadiah, assuming that he was a contemporary of Jeremiah. And he stated it in a most emphatic way. Edom had done three unforgivable things. Edom had encouraged Judah's foes, enjoyed Judah's fall, and even enslaved Judah's fugitives. This was the crowning act of wickedness, to stand at the mountain pass and catch the fleeing women and children and the beaten men, to catch them and hand them over to the Babylonians for death or deportation. Edom had indulged in treachery, and treachery was what Edom would reap. Edom shared in the spoil of Jerusalem, and as a result, Edom would be spoiled. Edom had urged utter destruction, and Edom would face utter destruction. God would see to it that justice was done. In fact, the first 16 verses of the brief 21-verse prophecy is devoted to predicting and describing Edom's doom. A key thought in the book of Obadiah is this: as thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. It is a prophecy of retribution and righteous judgment. Then, in the final 5 verses of the prophecy, Obadiah has a word for Judah. Think about how the people of Judah may have felt. Not only had they experienced personal trauma and national trauma, but they were also in theological turmoil. To those who were compromised in their theology and no longer trusted God, this tragedy would have proved that God was impotent in the face of the Babylonian god Marduk, or that he had betrayed his covenant and abandoned his people in their hour of need. You can imagine that many of the survivors were emotionally devastated and spiritually paralyzed. Other prophets had warned Judah that this fate was the consequence of rebellion against God, and that events would happen like God had specified in his covenant with them, as documented in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. But the people had stubbornly resisted such pleas for repentance and spiritual renewal. Instead, many of the people shook their fists in God's face, infuriated by his supposed betrayal. What do you say to a people who are convinced that their God has either died or that he failed to keep his covenant promises? Obadiah predicts the deliverance of Zion. They will again possess what God has promised. The very last verse of Obadiah's brief 21-verse prophecy declares that the kingdom shall be the Lord's. In the original Hebrew, the word melucha can refer to the royal office or kingship, and God's covenantal name is stated. So another way that we can read the last line is, the kingship will be Yahweh's. So we can look at this last phrase two ways. One way is that God was reassuring his people that Israel would be restored. But there is also a more subtle reminder that God is not just the king over Jerusalem, but the ruler over the entire cosmos. This theme carries through into the New Testament, where Jesus, God incarnate, is declared to be sovereign over all. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, Paul declares that Jesus Christ is the blessed and only potentate, the King of kings and the Lord of lords. And the portrayal of Jesus as king over all climaxes in the book of Revelation. A key significance of the book of Obadiah is that the prophecy is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ. Interestingly, long centuries after Nebuchadnezzar's destruction of Jerusalem, we still find evidence of Edomite hostility to the things and people of God. For Herod the Great, who massacred the babies of Bethlehem in his efforts to slay the infant Christ, was a descendant of the Edomites. But the Edomites could not stop God's plan and God's promises. And Obadiah's prophecy that the kingdom or the kingship is Yahweh's is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ, Yahweh incarnate. In Luke 24, when Jesus expounded about scriptures concerning himself from Moses and the prophets, he could point to the book of Obadiah and show the message of restoration and a glimpse of the redemptive gospel message, because it is ultimately through Jesus Christ that Obadiah's prophecy of God's kingship is fulfilled. If you would like to hear Obadiah's prophecy, stay tuned and I'll be reading it in just a moment. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless. The vision of Obadiah. Thus saith the Lord God concerning Edom. We have heard a rumor from the Lord, and an ambassador is sent among the heathen. Arise ye, and let us rise up against her in battle. Behold, I have made thee small among the heathen. Thou art greatly despised. The pride of thine heart hath deceived thee. thou that dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, that saith in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? Though thou exalt thyself as the eagle, and though thou set thy nest among the stars, thence will I bring thee down, saith the Lord. If thieves came to thee, if robbers by night, how art thou cut off? Would they not have stolen till they had enough? If the grape gatherers came to thee, would they not leave some grapes? How are the things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up? All the men of thy confederacy have brought thee even to the border. The men that were at peace with thee have deceived thee and prevailed against thee. They that eat thy bread have laid a wound under thee. There is none understanding in him. Shall I not in that day, saith the Lord, even destroy the wise men out of Edom, and understanding out of the mount of Esau? And thy mighty men, O Teman, shall be dismayed to the end that every one of the mount of Esau may be cut off by slaughter. For thy violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces, and foreigners entered into his gates, and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. But thou shouldest not have looked on the day of thy brother in the day that he became a stranger. Neither shouldest thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Neither shouldest thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress. Thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Neither shouldest thou have stood in the crossway to cut off those of his that did escape. Neither shouldest thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of distress. For the day of the Lord is near upon all the heathen. As thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. Thy reward shall return upon thine own head. For as ye have drunk upon my holy mountain, so shall all the heathen drink continually. Yea, they shall drink, and they shall swallow down, and they shall be as though they had not been. But upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance, and there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possessions. And the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau for stubble. And they shall kindle in them and devour them. And there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau, for the Lord hath spoken it. And they of the south shall possess the mount of Esau, and they of the plain, the Philistines, and they shall possess the fields of Ephraim and the fields of Samaria, and Benjamin shall possess Gilead. And the captivity of this host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites, even unto Zarephath. And the captivity of Jerusalem, which is in Sepharad, shall possess the cities of the south. And saviors shall come up on Mount Zion to judge the Mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's.